Peace, love, blessings, and honor. Welcome, everyone. I am your co-host, Eyes Red.
And I'm your co-host, Reality Soldier.
And we are Garvey's Ghost in the Spectrum of Roots.
Boom.
Boy, we're in a revolutionary mood today. Boy,
call me the sword and the shield.
Hey. So we're down in South Africa. And of course, we couldn't come to South Africa without touching base with some of the freedom fighters in the struggle for liberation.
Real revolutionary.
Introduce our special guest.
So today's special guest, like we say, is a revolutionary freedom fighter. The man that goes by the name of Paradise Keeler.
Yes.
Paradise, how are you doing?
I'm fine, my friends.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for your time, King. I'm fascinated by your story already. I didn't want you to run away with the story. I wanted to capture it on film.
We want the people to hear, you know, a real side of how things go down here, because, you know, in the UK, we only get what's shown on the main media. So we're trying to get a different vibes for everyone to really feel the current of what happened down here and how life is down here. So we're going to start with where you was born, Paradise, your parents, your siblings. How did life begin for you?
I was born here in Cape Town, South Africa, in Guguletu.
Okay.
Yeah, 1963, 18th of September.
Yeah. Another great Virgo.
My mom's
birthday. We're all over the place.
That's the same day as my mom.
You were born in the family of six. Four boys and one girl.
Okay.
Yes. The other one passed away. I don't mention that one.
Oh, wow. Sorry
to hear that. But I'm a twin.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Wow.
But my twin passed away a long time ago, I think 2010.
Okay.
Yeah. And my father was a taxi driver a long, long time ago in the 60s.
Right.
Yeah. His name was Willie Keeler.
Okay.
Yeah. My mother was a domestic worker.
Okay.
Yeah. My father, while he was a taxi driver, he had to also acquire a business as a hawker, selling primer stores, everything.
Right.
Yeah.
So like going door-to-door sales.
Yeah, kind of course,
hustling to survive.
Yes, and he was very handy person. He was the experience of making cupboards.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Carpenter.
Carpenter and fixing, if you remember, still remember the coal lamps. Coal lamps.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah. In the 60s, I think after he stopped being a taxi driver, he acquired a shop at Elway 50 in Guguletu.
Okay.
As hardware.
Right.
Where he was repairing the stoves, the paraffin stove, and the heater, paraffin heaters.
Right. Yes.
And making some cupboards. On the other side was a mechanic also.
Wow.
As
cars.
Cars was the jack of all trades.
Yeah.
So we grew up in that environment. So we used to stay at the shop where my father had there doing these things.
Right.
At the back where the shack, where is some shacks there that were. So we used to help him when we were young, all of us. My father was a strict, very strict person.
Right.
Yeah, he never smoked, he never drink.
Okay.
He was also a rugby player.
Okay.
Yeah, it was rugby player. So as we grew up at the place, I attended the school, my lower primary school, at Elita Primary School. From there, I went to Fezeka High School.
Okay.
Yeah, in the 70s, 1976, 76 to 1980.
Right.
Well, I met some comrades involved in the struggle.
Okay.
Yeah, those days, yeah.
At what age were you aware that there was a struggle? Because as a kid, you're running around, right?
Yeah, I was 14 years, 14, 15, yeah.
All right.
14, 15 years, those days, So, those days, I remember in 1985, there was a school uprising.
Okay.
Yeah, in 1985, school uprising. I was part of that. I think I was doing standard 6, grade 6 to stay, such grade 7, yeah.
And the school, the students just
revolting against the pan-purification those days.
Right.
Yeah, because on 76, I was very young those days, when I did 76, the first riots, yes. Soviet riots, yes, I was very young those days, yeah. So I participated through this one in 1985-1. So while we were busy, I did 5 hours involved with a lot of rastas.
Okay.
Yeah, in the ghetto called KTC.
Oh.
Yeah. So those rastas were involved in the military operations with the Babylon. So we about 20 rastas staying there in the KTC. Remember there were shacks those days there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there were a lot of notorious Babylon were killing our brothers here in the ghetto, especially in KTC and Bouvlet.
What did you call it? What are the security? Was it
bus? Yeah, it was the security police. Yeah, security police.
All right, okay.
Yeah, security. Yeah, it was a famous notorious cop was called Barnard.
Right.
Barnard, yeah. That one, he knows the ghetto, and he was very fluent also in our language, our right. language, yeah. So when they came to ghetto, in the ghetto there, in the dance, especially in the dance there, they used to come then beat people, take ganja and harass people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I ask, were they black cops or white cops?
No, the white cops.
Right.
White cops, yeah. The white cops, yeah. So while we're there in KDC, I was recruited, in fact, for one of these rastas to be part of that unit. That's where we're confronting this Babylon in KTC.
Okay.
So we were trained how to use arms, especially AKs and guns, small guns, etc., etc. So as every night we go out looking for them. While they're looking for us, we go there looking for them at night, yeah. So there were a lot of skirmishes with us in them.
Right.
If you remember those days, we were
so not, these are like gun battles, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
We used to ambush them.
Okay.
Yeah, at night we'd ambush them at night,
a
yeah.
Warfare.
Yes, right. So one night we planned this operation, but this man was problematic in the ghetto. So one of our leader called Rasta Pete, the late Rasta. If you remember, there was this Kogulete 7. Those Rastas were killed in Kogulete 1986.
Right, that's right, yeah.
Remember those seven guys were killed there. Yeah. So one of our leaders, the guy who recruited me, was Christoph Pete. Yeah, the one was killed also there.
Okay.
Yeah. So we arranged this operation. One night, this guy came at night, passing there that they were in the main road, Nyanga East in there. So one of the guys there, they rolled three hand grenades.
Okay.
One F1. They tied it together, so it makes three.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I remember who threw the grenade. So we're sitting, staying in the road at night, corner to corner. Mm-hmm. So we're watching him. So he came as usual. Came to disrupt the community at night, it was 10, 11 o'clock at night.
Okay.
So we watched him, it was quiet. No noise, only him driving at night. As he approached us, we signal. Here come the bastard. And then I'm telling you, imagine whenever I use grenade, we were trained.
Right.
But one of the rastas, they threw that grenade inside that car, exploded inside that car, killing one of his colleagues.
Okay.
And then shot at him. But the pattern didn't die there, but was badly injured. But one cop died there.
Okay.
From there, it was a serious problem for us.
Because they were coming for you.
Yeah,
now.
Coming for us, yeah. Right. So the Babylon started to search houses in KTC,
right.
Beating people, shooting people, looking for these rastas.
Right.
Yeah. So it was decided by other comrades, elderly comrades, that hey, comrades, we have to leave.
Okay. So what was your father's view of the whole struggle type of thing? Obviously, he had the responsibility of protecting his family, but he would have been aware of the struggle and how it was taking place.
Yeah, but my father was, according to the information we have, my father was very instrumental towards our struggle.
Right.
Yeah, in the ghetto, yeah. Because as I had for my mother and his brothers in the family, brothers of mine in the family, he was also very, very vocal
right.
in the struggle.
So it really was a community uprising.
Yes, yeah. He was very supportive in the struggle those days. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to quickly mention before we move on, you said the Rasta, what about music and the music from Jamaica and that revolutionary reggae music? Was that part of the soundtrack to the revolution anyhow?
Yes, it was. It was, yes, yeah. I think the reggae music played a very instrumental role towards us as black people inside the country,
right?
Especially the Rastas. Yeah, so it motivated us,
of course,
yeah, to be in the forefront of the struggle against apartheid inside the country.
Were there any particular tracks you remember?
Yes, there were tracks that was very fascinating and very famous in the ghetto. Was sang, I think it was by a band from UK. I think the band was the name
That's
of the
right,
track.
No.
I think this was White Band.
UB40.
No. This, the track was called Free Mandela.
Oh,
see,
yes.
That's what I am.
Yeah, that was international.
See, that one.
Nelson Mandela.
It was a burning song.
Yeah.
Okay. That one. And we used to the tracks like Hugh Mandel, Free Africa.
Free.
Yeah. All those kind of, and not mentioning it as well. Peter Tosh.
Okay.
So Equal Rights, and the track called Apartheid.
Yes.
From
Peter Tosh's album,
And Eddie Grant had one, Give Me Hope, Joanna.
So there's a lot. So also, especially for us in that ghetto.
You didn't feel so isolated.
Even in the dancehall also.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have to pay those tracks, everybody out. It's where it was decided that the comrades, we have to, Rastas were to go to exile.
Yeah.
Right? Because the Babylon was looking for us.
Right.
One day I was in one of the matches there, one of the protests in Crossroad, a place called Crossroad.
Yes.
Yeah. So we ambushed one of the policemen there. But unluckily, I was spotted by one of the cops and I was shot.
You were shot?
Yeah, I was shot, yeah. Close range.
Ow.
Yeah. But with the bad shots. Remember the bad shots? So
Yeah.
I was shot right in that bed where I was hiding, in that house. Close. I had 200 to 300 of this thing inside my body.
Wow, man. Police shoot you?
Yeah, the police, yeah. So I was taken to a clinic. There was a white, comrades, was a doctor there, Dr. Ivan, something like that, was a permanent doctor among us in the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
So they saw me when I went inside the clinic, but lucky they changed my clothes and then the police came there. So they took me in the window, they put me in the boot of the car.
Okay.
And then everybody came there, this policeman, they said the men went inside there.
Okay.
So I was stepped out there with the back thrust in my body. I never felt the pain like that. Everywhere.
Got sprayed.
I still have those things in my body.
I was just going to ask, you must have.
I still have them. Yeah. I still have them in my body.
The scars.
Anyway.
No, the pellets.
Yeah, the pellets. The pellets.
They couldn't get them all out.
No. But they tried, but there was no time for them to take me out. So they stick me out from there. I had to run away from home. I never went back home. Okay. So I was outside home. Staying with friends in the ghetto.
Right.
So until I met one comrade from exile, called a Sizwe, soldier. Okay. So I think the cops were cornered him. So he managed to run away and then he came to our side. But I know him, I was a youngster, I know him.
Right.
Yeah, but I never know he went to exile. So our friends say, get a transport to move him from this section to another section. So I took him to my aunt's place, another house to Durban. I harboring him to another place, yeah.
Right.
So it's where he trained me personally.
Right.
Firearms, AK, grenades, political education. Then he set up a meeting with his other friends, other comrades that must be taken out of the country.
Okay.
Yes. From that day, we told today we are leaving.
So he was kind of recruited as a young soldier within the revolution?
Yes. Wow. Yeah. So imagine those days in the 80s, after the Google 7, after those were killed there, right?
Yes.
And imagine, I was part of that, but I was not involved in the operation.
Okay.
But I was involved, but Cha was on my side, because the day they left operation, right. I was at home with one of my graduates called Chabulani Mia.
Okay.
Yeah, I was killed also there. So while these guys were going for operation, right, they were going with a combi. They stole this combi.
Okay.
We hijacked that combi.
Right.
It's for Baker.
The vehicle, yeah?
Yeah, the vehicle, yeah. It's for bakery.
Right.
Mm. Hijacked it. So that combi was going to be used for this operation. Uh-huh. And actually, one of us, there was a snitcher among us there. Right? So this snitcher stole the album, photo album.
Right.
Oh.
So before we went for the operations, the cops already knew what's going to happen there. Right? Imagine that time we were infiltrated by three former Nkondwesizwe soldiers. We're namely called the Askaris. The name called Askari. We didn't know what is that.
Right.
Mm. Right? What does it mean to be Askari? But later on we found that the Askaris are comrades who were bona fide members of the Revolution Nkondwesizwe Army.
Right.
Who were arrested and tend to be,
of course,
apartheid spies to recruit the youngsters in the ghetto,
yes,
right, to be killed or be arrested by the police.
Yeah.
So when these comrades, these rasters went with that operation, these guys were already present on the car. So that morning I was asked with Rasta Chabulani Mia to go and check the venue. I went there with one of the Askaris.
Yeah, right.
So, but when we came there, the place of the operation, where this is going to be happening,
mm-hmm.
we find that there were cars there, but 6-7 cars
right.
in that place, that forest. Then I asked them, I mean, it's very strange, at this time of the night, in the morning,
yeah.
I asked him, this guy, this Askari, why they come to a lot of cars? And then he was very pissed off about me. I asked him questions. Anyway, he asked us to drop him here. We waited in the car. But this man appeared far away from us with a torch. And I was suspicious, but I mean, he's a trained person.
Yeah.
But when we came back to the house where everybody was gathered for operations, right? We met there two other Askaris and this one.
Right.
Then they reported back. But objection on this thing. I said, look, I saw some cars there, parked there. And then everybody was pissed off. You are afraid, you know? We are afraid to go and fight, blah, blah, blah. I tried to explain what's going on. And Chabulani also mentioned them. Right. Anyway, they pissed off, went outside to my mother's place. When we came there, my mother and Chabulani's mother were going out for work. 6 o'clock in the morning, we started to eat them bread and coffee. While we were eating, I told Jake, these people are leaving.
Hmm.
So Chabulani left everything there and ran to the combi. But while I was busy locking the house, when I get out, the combi, the distance and myself was a little bit far.
Right.
So Chabulani was chasing the combi. As I tried, the distance, when I came, he managed to open that combi, the door. While the combi was moving, not fast, he went inside. When it's my time to enter, that man that I was with in the morning said, no, there's no space for you, go home.
Right.
And there at the place, the house where they left, they were at the rastas there. They left a limpet mine there.
Oh, wow.
So they told us, they said, you guys, you don't go for this operation. Those guys were left there.
Right.
You guys, your operation, we are going to blow the Kogoloti police station with this landmine. Big landmine.
Okay, yeah.
But I'm telling you, in the morning, one of my neighbor came there. But we could hear the gunfire. Right. From here, it's a distance from here to that place. We could hear from past 6 in the morning to 7 o'clock. Wow. The AK, it was quiet in the morning. It rang for about 30 to 40 minutes. Mm. One guy came there, my neighbor said, hey, all those guys are dead.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, all of them are dead. Whoa. We didn't know who and who and who.
Yeah, right.
My neighbor, the guy I escaped the country with, it's my neighbor.
Okay.
He is the one. Came back with this gun, right? And explained to us, hey, we were ambushed by this police.
Mm.
Finally, anyway, I think there were two people survived there. Right. Now what the police department did, and it is, they knew that these attacks were going to take place in this area.
Right.
So they put their snipers everywhere. The first person to be killed was the driver.
Okay.
So after the driver was shot, there was a chaos.
Of course.
So all of them were shot.
Picked off.
While their hands up, their hands on their...
Right, okay. They're surrendering.
Shot. Yeah. Cold-blooded, right?
Right, yeah.
Now, it was decided, me and my neighbor to keep the country. So we left the country.
That's what drove you into exile.
Yes, well, went to the country, went to Lesotho.
Lesotho, yeah.
Yeah, when we came to Lesotho, we through the underground structure of the ANC. We met some comrades who were in Lesotho working for the ANC.
Right.
So they took us to United Nations offices there.
Okay.
To register as a refugee, to get refugee status.
Right, okay.
Those days, some were there.
Yeah.
So we take him from there to this place where they kept the center, all the refugees who applied
like
for. Yeah, they camp there in the refugee, United Nations or refugee camp.
Right.
All the people who were there for what is this?
Asylum,
yeah.
Yes.
So from there, we think we stayed 2 months there. From there, we take him from there to Botswana, I think to Zambia. Plane, okay. Took us a big plane. From there, we landed to Zambia. It's where is Zambia. When we came to Zambia, it's where the name Paradise came from.
Okay, right.
Yes.
Right. So, I wanted to ask you a quick question. For the myself and the viewers, how old was you when you had to pick up arms to fight the revolution?
18. Yeah. So when I came from Zambia, we stayed in Zambia. From Zambia,
you were 2 months. Was it 2 months you was in Zambia?
No. In Lesotho.
Oh, in Lesotho.
Yeah, in Zambia. Okay. When we came to Zambia, when we come, they ask you, they see. Yeah, write your paragraph, etc., etc. And then you want to go to school or you want to go to the two choices you have there.
Right.
I mean, my militancy didn't require me to go to school that time. I said,
no.
I don't go to Tanzania or go to the school there.
Right.
See, I wanted to go to the camps, I want to go for the training.
Yeah.
So we're taken from there, from Zambia, a plane to Angola.
Angola,
ANC camps. So also in Angola, we came there, we stayed in the transit, in the ANC camp, the
right.
Transit camp. All the people who come from other places who go to that camp before, they send you to the camps, to the main camps for training.
Right.
So I think I stayed there some few months there.
So that training that was given to you by, would that have been, I know it was Che Guevara, them and Fidel, was, and I noticed the rhetoric, comrade and thing like that. Was it sort of Castro based? Was that, because I know the Cubans were very much instrumental in providing training and weaponry.
Yeah, so. But I mean, basically the people who were supporting our struggle and the training abroad was the Cubans and the Russians.
Yes. Right. I didn't want to mention the R word.
It was them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Especially in Angola.
Yeah. So, even in the camp, so I was required to go to, I chose to go military training. When we came to Angola, also in Angola, after training, he's going to determine where they want to go for specialization.
Right.
For this course, people will be sent to Russia, to Cuba, Czechoslovakia, Germany, all these countries for further education, military training or education, etc. But I, because I had, since I was shot,
right,
I asked them to take me to hospital first. So where I was done this operation. So I think this was done in Zambia.
Right. Okay.
I went for operation in Zambia, but the problem was very serious for me. When I landed in Zambia, when they checked, they found out that these belt shorts are very deep. Bullets are deep, very deep.
Right.
So it means if I have to go take them, all of them, then I will die because they're going to have to do a lot of cuts.
Yeah.
So it's they took place, few of them, I forgot some of them in the army. But even those ones, they were very deep in the veins. So I was told, you see, we'll stay the rest of your life with these things. And in the future, they'll cause problems in your life. From there, I was from to Angola.
Okay.
Angola, I came to Angola in the south, a camp called Kimpango.
Okay.
So it was very, very, very serious problem when we went there, because there were skirmishes between Umkhonto we Sizwe, military, and the FAPLA, which is with the army from Angola.
Okay.
Yeah. So we were ambushed along the route from Luanda to the north or to the east in the camps there.
Wow. Okay.
So we ambushed by the UNITA rebels.
UNITA.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow.
We helped by the South African apartheid regime.
Of course. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was just, we had to go to the camps where for training or to bring food. It was very problematic because we get people killed along the way. You see? So anyway, I right about there, so I went to a disc camp. From there, after training, I was sent back inside the country. Back to come and fight after finishing my training.
South Africa. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, from there I was from.
How long were you out there getting your training and recovering from whatever?
After there, I think I stayed in the camp for more than a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Because mind you, I was also trained before I left the country.
Right.
So I didn't do the full military training. So I did some few courses.
Okay.
I was trained in firearms again, specialized in firearms, engineering.
Okay.
MCW, which means it's called military combat work.
Okay.
Yeah. Surveillance, counter surveillance, all these things. Yeah. Already trained by that guy I met inside the country, former MK guy. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think I stayed in that camp in Pango, I think for five months. Then I was sent inside the country.
And what was, what, were you aware of what the happenings that were going on back home as well?
Yes.
Okay.
So what was fascinating about that, while we in Angola, When there's a time for news, we stop everything. There was time for news, there was time for culture, art and culture. We play soccer and sing and what. But when the time for news, we're very current.
Finger on the pulse.
Yes. We stop everything.
Yeah, you have to be up to date.
Yeah, and then there were some political commissars there who feed us about political education.
Mm.
What is the ANC, the role of the ANC to whatever struggle, what is expected from you, all those kind of things. So we're up to date. While I was still in the Angola, there was this war going on in Namibia.
Right.
So sometimes we'll be in the camps, we'll tell us this is the MiG-9 or what.
Yeah.
So passing from there to go to Namibia, that side.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. And there were some other comrades within the MK who were also part of that battle there. Which was happening, the Battle of Carnival.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to Google that thing there.
Okay.
It was quite interesting. It's where the Boers were hit badly.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, I think they were, according to reports, they were about 10 kilometers to capture Namibia, South South Africa.
Right.
The Cubans came there. Quite interesting, Cubans and the Russians. And I have to mention this thing. I think I have to applaud and be thankful to the Russians and the Cubans. Without them, I don't think we have where we are today in our struggle.
We always had that feeling that the Russians and the Cubans were really interested in the struggle and liberation of African people.
Yes.
Whether it was for their own personal needs or their own get back at the West, we didn't care. Yeah. But we do know they facilitated
a lot. You know what is, nice about it is that they didn't just help us only, they helped most African countries. who were colonized and then
yeah, Mozambique, people, yeah.
And that's where we get people like Che Guevara.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Great Che Guevara.
That's why I was asking earlier about not so much about the reggae music, the cultural influence, and that was being reflected.
And to come on that one, I think in the camps, as I explained, the role of reggae inside the country in the dance, that when it came inside the camps, it was the same vibes.
Of course.
In the camps, that music inspired us.
Right.
Very much, very much. In the camps, music of Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, Bennings PA, all these guys. It was the daily music, although there were other genres in the music. Reggae, that one, I was shocked. People keep playing this kind of music.
Yeah.
So it's what that music inspired us there.
And it really underlines the oneness of our peoples, regardless of where we are, all over the world.
Yes, I think also there was another concert, it was done by Peter Tosh, I think it's Africa Benefit Show, where I was raising funds for the PEC, the ANC, I think so, I remember. Peter Tosh was very pan-Africanist, especially most rasters.
Yeah.
Believing with Azania, all those kind of things. But I'm not against that.
So
what I'm trying to say is reggae really play a very vital role.
Mm.
Yeah, giving us strength and hope that we are going to be free.
I think it would be easy for people to forget that, to forget the influence of the Russians and the Cubans and the music from the reggae artists. Because we all felt it, man. Like I said, we were always watching what was happening in South Africa.
Yeah.
We were intrigued because we were having our own struggles and we were seeing armed resistance happening in South Africa. It was like, whoa.
I think we also knew about what is happening in other countries.
Yeah.
Yeah, Latin American countries, about what was happening there. Even in the UK, as I mentioned earlier, they struggled, but when it was happening in the 80s there, riots in Birmingham, those kind of things. There were artists like Linton Kwesi Johnson, and Mutaba Ruka, all those kind of things. So we knew what was going on there.
Yeah.
And I have to thank the national community, international government, people like in America, especially in Britain, were supporting our struggle there.
Yeah.
It was great. Wow. So we knew that, we are not alone. I don't think the comrades who were in exile can easily forget the role of the Cubans and the Russians.
Right.
Yeah, and I think I have to also mention the role of the Tanzanian people, especially the late President Nyerere. That one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think ANC was very welcome there.
Right.
I don't see other countries never, but Tanzania was the best country that we felt the home. Although I've never been Tanzania, I've never been there.
Right.
But comrades who were there, I think the Tanzanian people suffered a great loss for helping the ANC. People lost their lives there.
Yeah.
Bombings and kidnappings and what lot of things happened to them. I'm thankful what this country's helped us in their struggle.
So let's talk about, this is fascinating. Let's talk about your return from exile and coming back as a quote unquote legitimate bona fide freedom fighter. Tell me the story and how you got your name.
Yes, when we come into exile, the first thing they do, we write a biography from there. Will be giving me a pseudonym.
Which when you say they do a biography, what?
Your biography, who are you?
Yeah, right.
Where were you born? What's your family?
A bit like this.
Yeah. With family, history. Friends.
Yeah.
What was your role inside the country towards our struggle?
Right.
Who you met outside the country?
Right.
Write their names. Yeah, your personal information.
Right.
With your children, with your girlfriend. As your mother knows that you're in exile. Did the cops raid the house or looking for you?
Okay.
I think to a safer site. Because if they, maybe, for example, they found that but you were 100% wanted, that to their life.
Okay.
So it won't be easy for them after training and send you back inside the country to fight, because it was
too risky. Very comprehensive.
Yeah. Unless, I mean, your information was not so. Maybe we can come and sleep inside the camp without being detected.
It was quite sophisticated. I know they try and say it was just a bunch of crazy people running around fighting against the powers, but it was sophisticated.
So what I was saying is that, I mean, when I came there, I came there as Spew Mickey Killer.
Which was your natural name.
Yeah.
Right.
But after the biography, beginning a pseudonym, which was Paradise Magwaza.
Okay.
My surname, Remind me, Makila is my surname.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So when I left Angola, I went to Zambia. Right? With a bunch of comrades, various units. Right? But I came to Botswana. While we were infiltrating, but it's quite interesting. I remember we crossed Zambezi River. At night, all right? But we're staying in a big house in Zambia, somewhere in Zambia, right? I mean, most of the time, we were not eager to check what we wanted. We wanted to go home, right?
Of course.
So other information, you didn't put yourself to acquire.
Right.
We wanted to come home. I mean, I know I'm going back inside the camp to fight, right? So we remember when we were a bunch of eight guys, right? Going with the boat from Zambezi River to that side.
Yes.
That's so I think I went to get some water. When I came back, I was told, no, the boat already full, so you're gonna come with another group. All right?
Okay.
But a sad story happened there. I think eight guys died.
On the first boat?
Yeah, like boat, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So, I think the hippopotamus guy.
Oh, really?
You know those things when they're mating? You don't want noise in the river.
Yes.
So, I think the hippo hit the boat.
Wow.
And then the boat capsized. I think we lost eight comrades there.
Wow.
And hard to believe, you know, most comrades, they didn't know how to swim.
Is it a very fast flowing river, Zambezi?
Yeah. So most of them were eaten by crocodiles. And imagine, even that incident didn't deter us, stop us not going forward. So the next trip, I was one on that trip. Right. I mean, I was very young at that time. So I have to cross. While we were in Botswana, we crossed in Botswana. I think it was in Kruger National Park. We crossed the Kruger National Park. Remember, there were lions there. All kind of animals at night, right? And we instructed not to use firearms there, because when you shoot any animal, the boars in the border gate, they will hear that sound.
Right.
And then, and it's, you can see the helicopter patrolling there, the boars patrolling there, that area. So eventually we cross. As we walk there in the bush there, I hear the noise there, a voice, very gruesome voice. So I can say, I can hear this is a Babylon police,
right,
a soldier.
Right.
They said, stop, or I will shoot. With that accent, man,
right,
this Babylon accent. And then from there, they was shooting all over the place, shooting all over the place. Imagine, there's no light. The only thing there was there was the moon. It's like, it was like a day, man. It's light in night. Just shooting. All of us were scattered.
Right.
That group. All right?
Then, how many of you? Eight.
No, I think more. Eight of us, yeah. I think two guides.
Who, right.
And that was six of us, yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know them. But we know them that because I was coming to Cape Town. They're going to Joburg and other places. I don't know where they're going.
Right.
So, you see there, they make the holes for trapping the animals. National Park, it's where the incident happened there. So there's a big hole there, they put it some trees there, cover this hole. So accidentally I fell inside that hole there.
Stop.
You know, I think there's those things that they're very sharp, man. It's just three
spikes. Spikes.
Yeah, that, yeah. Yeah. So my feet were inside there. So they were inside my foot. Eight of them, they put, and I lost one of my boot. Right. After 20 minutes, after this skirmish, 20 minutes later, we don't hear anybody.
Right.
Imagine, when we reach the fence, there's another set of people that's supposed to take us to another destination.
Okay.
Right. So I don't know what happened. People have been arrested. I don't know anything. I heard the voice, people calling us by names, and I responded. And they took me out of that
bullet. Yeah,
they took me out there. And I couldn't walk because this inside and bleeding.
Of course.
Anyway, I was safe. Other comrades were safe. Others were arrested. Imagine in Botswana, if you're arrested there, they send you back, even in Zimbabwe, or Harare, they send you back
really?
To Zambia.
Right.
So we have to recognize again another trip back inside the country.
Right.
Anyway, I was taken to Botswana. It was raining, man, when I came there in town. First thing, they took me to a doctor. There's ANC comrades there waiting for us. So I was taken, then the 3 days later, I was told, you're going to stay in Botswana, the motels, there's no most of hotels, the motels.
Right.
Motels, yeah. So they put in their hotel, in the motel. So one day, I was sitting there and I saw big lights, man. I think it's the army. And they were calling names. With the Botswana police. Michael, Rose, what, Romano, what, come out, all those names, man. They
really?
Know. But luckily, when I saw the lights, I went outside, up to the gate. They passed me, they didn't know me. Mm-hmm. But there was a woman there, man. I think there was a prostitute, the young ladies there, was a prostitute, I think. I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And then they called me. Remember, I'm not fluent in that language they speak there.
A little bit
I know. A little bit of English. That woman saved my life that night. She said, don't go back to Rome. Maybe the soldiers are going to come. So it's very amazing that the shelter is not like this half. Okay. But it's deep down still, deep down there.
Okay.
So yeah, we went there. I slept in that night. The next morning, they used to come. The couriers for us, they came to fetch me. Right?
Right.
So in the fence, there's a village. There's a village there. When you sit in that village, you can see the Boers patrolling there.
Right.
So this courier, you sit there, you to study their movement. From 6 and 8 o'clock, if they pass 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock, they will come back at 3 or 4.
Okay.
Oh, I mean, for the 2 weeks, I was sitting there. Yeah, like from other days, see? Paradise, your time now.
Right.
Imagine those days, I mean, the only thing I had with me was a Makarov and some grenades.
Right.
The only thing I had.
Wow.
No AK, I would get my stuff inside the country. So anyway, I gone, hey, this lady stopped bus, you cross over, place called Mafeking, something like that.
Mm.
When you pass from there, take us to here, to Chobek. We approached a roadblock, big roadblock.
This is on the way to Joburg?
Yeah.
All right.
Big roadblock. This lady said to me, give me a small bag. Small bag in here with Mr. Makarov.
Mm-hmm.
He stole some two grenades
and
some spare magazine. Now, this is the bus, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of school children in the morning. So I decided to take my scarf and put it. Because I knew these little ones, they won't want to speak with me. I'm not fluent in the language.
Right.
So I covered myself. Luckily, what I predicted happened, one child was busy asking me to help, right, or homework. In the bus, I tried, and he was very young.
Right.
All of them came flocking me, so I couldn't speak. And in that bus, there were also some undercover policemen there.
Right.
Mm. Anyway, I came to Joburg, fine. The lady, go back. But the bad thing, when I came, the train that goes to Cape Town already gone.
Right. Oh.
The next train will be the following day.
Okay. Right.
While I was sitting there, I saw four guys coming in the park station in Joburg. One of them, I know, I was with him in the camps, and I know he's a one brother of mine in Cape Town. But he was 10 also, working with the police. He was a 10, Askari. Yeah. I know him, I grew up with him.
Okay.
He was very notorious at this point. So I went to the toilet, and he came back, he said, he called me by my name, Mickey. He didn't call me Paradise. He said, Mickey, please, don't go outside, that side. Take your bags and go to get a taxi, and then you go to Krugersdorp. I never even knew where Krugersdorp. You ask in the rank, just get a special taxi.
Yeah.
Otherwise, those guys, is this one, this one. You know, they train with you in Angola.
Right.
That man saved my life, that boy.
Right.
So I imagine, now I have to take a taxi to Krugersdorp. I had a family, my family in Joburg, my cousins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I said, no, man. And I can't go there during the day. I waited somewhere in town. I didn't have too much luggage. Just put back, you know, stuff, money and things. Then I stayed, later at night, I went to a Hebrew, because I'm not in a space in Hebrew those days. I couldn't stay, go to a nightclub there, pay it until, I stayed until the next morning. Next morning, I took a taxi to Krugersdorp.
Right.
Took a train to Cape Town.
Right.
Imagine from Joburg to Cape Town, it's a long distance.
Yeah.
Right.
Luckily, I was safe on the road. When the train came in Cape Town, in the station called Worcester.
Yeah.
As I was
there the other day.
But Worcester, then comes to Belvin Station.
Right.
Really. That thing happened to me there. While I was getting out of the train, then I saw one woman, the best friend of my mother. And then he shouted, "Wow, Mickey, are you back?" All those kind of things. Because imagine, I was not supposed to be known that I'm back
inside the country. Yeah, you're supposed to be incognito.
Yes, you see, I said, yes, this woman always is going to tell the family there. Yeah. Then my car will be blown. So I decided, to take another train that goes back to Pal.
Wow.
From Bebel to Pal. Look, I know some people before I left the country in Pal. As I entered that house, there was a temple in Pal that time. There was protest matches in them. Pal was burning that time. As I entered that house, you know the hippo,
those
police bands.
Stopped there.
I got the credit and then I gave this lady this bag of money and I gave it to her. Now I had some money, ANC gave me money that time, a lot of money for operations and I had a lot of money with me. Now, these cops asked, because I think they were looking for the brother of this lady.
Right.
Okay. He's a very problematic person, he was a very radical person, so they were looking for him.
In a revolutionary center? Okay.
Yeah. Right. So they asked me, it's like this. I don't have anything. Sorry. I don't have anything with me. So what they did, they said to me, I said, the problem is going to start. Remember, when you come inside the country, they give you some coding, some codes.
Yes.
Right. And this white policeman said to me, then he saw this man, this woman, I think is. He's a hairdresser there, the salon there.
Right.
So he was a very brave woman. He said, no, this is my boyfriend. This is my money.
Right.
And he took all that money. But the problem I had, this coding.
Right.
This white person took this paper and then read this nonsense. And then he asked by Africans, what the fuck is this? It means, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Right? And then I immediately was going to ask someone in the van to come and read this thing.
Right.
So I grabbed this paper and put it in my mouth.
Okay.
So had they got hold of your codes and deciphered it, we don't know how many people's lives could have been jeopardized just by them having that information. So you decided the best thing was, bam, I'm hungry.
Yes, man. Yes, I've done that. But anyway, I survived there.
Right.
Imagine when I came there in part of that time, there was a turmoil, there was infighting.
Right.
Between the PAC and the African National Congress.
That's Pan-African Congress,
yes.
And the African National.
I believe what happened there, I think one person there, I think one guy is shot, a girl from a youth league, accidentally.
All right.
Now, the same weapon that were used to kill this lady accidentally, was killed by a comrade accidentally.
Right.
Now, the same gun was used to kill the opponent, the PAC in that side.
Right.
So there were serious problems there.
Okay.
Now, the community decided, hey, maybe there's some askaras here, or the theft posse.
Yeah. Right.
So they must check everybody that knew on this location.
Oh.
Then it means, I mean, this gun killed the PAC,
yeah,
and now killed the ANC. Yeah. I mean, this can never be
what's
that.
What's going on, yeah.
Without knowing what's going to happen. Yeah. So that time was, Paul, call it, was turmoil, is in fighting there. On the other side, Babylon is fighting with them down.
Yeah.
So it was decided, hey, Paradise, go back to Cape Town. Because now if the community can arrest you, then they will think it's you on the thing. I know who did that thing there. So I left. When I came to Cape Town in KTC, remember as well, we started those operations.
Yes.
With Banat, them, that crucial, that no telescope. I went there. When I came to Cape Town, KTC was burning. There was infighting there with the vigilantes.
Okay.
With the ANC.
Right.
In the house burning there, see dead bodies. When I came that time, 1980, I came back to the country. So I went to my aunt's place to come and stay there.
Right.
Remember, my aunt went to exile. Right? I went to stay there, that house. I stayed, no problem, I stayed in that house. I think someone spotted me there. Then they started to sell this security police, special branch police there in that house. So they monitor. Until one day, they came introducing themselves, working for telecommunications, so they came to repair the phone.
Right.
I tell them, this phone is working. He said, no. This phone is not working. Yeah. So I said to my cousin, hey, something's wrong, I'm not trying. But nothing told me to move my house, but I stayed there. One night, I think I was coming from one of my operations there. I saw a group of comrades patrolling the area at night. I think one of them was a snitcher among those people.
Right.
I spoke to them. They stopped me because I was carrying R4 machine gun.
Okay.
Right. But they know me. I will talk with them. In the morning, I think 3 in the morning, I dream. I dream is sleeping. And then I was screaming to my cousin, say, what's going on? I say, hey, man, I dreamed of cops coming here with paraclubs and what. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't sleep again, right? So my cousin took a small baby and said, I'm sleep with me. Sleep next. I'm sure 30 minutes later, the same dream I had happened.
Right.
Really. The reality. They banged the doors and what. You know, I think they had tactic when I think the policemen would come the rest to they make a noise and scare you and all languages.
To shock you, isn't it?
Yeah. So I was relaxing. Imagine, I took this machine gun and put it on the wardrobe, zipped it up and put it there. I had nothing with me. Right?
Yeah.
The first thing they asked me, they were cops, I told them, who are you? I gave him another name,
right.
Because I registered at the Utah BC University as an undercover student there. I was not there, somebody made those things.
Yeah, yeah.
I was working with them underground, those people there. So I had this a student card that this.
Right.
I'm a
student. More sophisticated.
Yeah. So, I mean, the information they had is totally different now.
Right.
Now, they said, ask that man in the car. I said, hey, they mentioned this man's name. But to me, I didn't know who's this person. That man came there When he came to say, I saw him in the paper before I was arrested. He's one of the comrades, I think, was arrested somewhere, you know. But he turned.
Right.
I don't know what happened there. It was, yeah, whatever. So he asked him, who's this person? And then he told him who I am.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes.
Snitched on you.
The racist problem
was... What did you say? Paradise?
Yes, it's Paradise Makwaza.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's one of the special operations comrade.
Right.
I mean, it got nothing to do with special ops.
Right.
I was just a normal guerrilla.
Well, he told them that.
Told them that. You know, that means more beatings and torture.
Oh, wow.
Because he mentioned, I mean, if you're a special ops person, I mean, they know where the top class.
They want the information from you.
Chief, I'm telling you. The beating started.
What?
It's where I lost my teeth.
What?
I have some beatings in the head there, lots of places there. And I was stripped naked in that house. Right? While they were busy looking for arms, they didn't get anything. Yeah. One cop decided they could lift that wardrobe.
Right.
They didn't get an AK-47, they get an R4, this Israel manufacturing weapons. Mm. Then the problem started.
Shit.
Then there came the problem. Who is Mike Peter White?
Right.
Who is Mickey? Who is this? I mean, it's all my names. I mean, it's where the beating started.
All your pseudonyms.
All the between 4 in the morning until 7 o'clock.
Oh, no.
People were stopped from going to where they have to use another road. They circled that road.
Right.
Now, they're going to arrest me. Handcuffed, eating a lot of blood. Then I think, you know, that third thing too, that make to train your hand.
Yeah.
That
thing,
yeah. Yeah. That police captain hit me in the private parts, telling you, badly. I'm sure 30 minutes later, and you see blood coming up.
Of course.
I was taken away for interrogation.
Right.
From there I was arrested. Right. Me alone, arrested in that house. No, with my cousin.
Okay.
And they took care different places. So I was arrested. On November, I think November, the 1st of November, 10th of November, 1988, and I was arrested.
Right.
While I came into the country in 1989, when I came into the country, I think on 1st of January, arrested. And I was charged under the Terrorism Act.
Okay.
Right? And I was sent to Section 29 of the Special Branch Act.
Right.
Now, Section 29, you're not supposed to be visited. No visitors, no paper, no news, no visit.
Yeah.
Anything like that.
Totally.
The only thing that is there is the interrogation and torture.
Right.
Every day.
No lawyer, no representation.
Then you went to these meetings. Then I thought, hey, Section 29, you are being sent there for 6 months.
Okay. Where is this? Robin Island?
Outside. You sit there. You don't go to court. You sit there in that cell.
Right.
Alone in the cell. A white cop sit there. You have no privacy there.
Right.
He sits there 24 hours a day, makeshift.
Okay.
Wow. Washing at you. Beatings. They don't beat you there. They take you to their special branch headquarters in town. Mm. Where there you'll be given a big album to pinpoint who is this.
Many people.
To me, it was very difficult because I never left the country in the 1970s. I left the country in the 80s. Right, so I might not know people who left the country in the 80s, in the 76, all those years. So I don't know them. So we're starting to look at the album. The people left the country in the 86, and then 76. I don't know them, but you have to be smart. I mean, you have to be smarter there, right? Many comrades died in detention. I was asked to write a biography. It took me for 2 to 3 days to write that biography.
What do they want in this paragraph?
Who I am.
Mm. Or your biography.
Who I am. Right. Because they accuse me as a terrorist, right?
Right.
Now, where do I click? All this kind of, that's why I lied there.
Right.
So there was, I remember there was a commission of police. I think it was Brigadier Kutsi, something like that. This man came to my cell at night. I see there was something there, came there. Oh, is this one? Yes. You remember that time I was the youngest member of Mkhonto we see with that year.
Right.
In the whole country, okay. Youngest member at that time.
You were about what, 1920?
No, 1988 was arrested. Was the youngest member.
All
right. In the whole country to be arrested, the youngest.
Well, how old was you at the time?
I think it was 18, 18, yeah, 18, yeah, was youngest, yeah. Compared to the people arrested before me.
Right. You know?
So he came there, he read this paragraph of these pages, and he took a red ball pen. I mean, I'm 6 months there, solitary confinement. Right. He took this red ball pen and just put an X there. He said, what the hell are you writing? Because I didn't write what you wanted.
Right.
Right. So there's no incrementing information that I'm writing about myself. So he smashed everything there. He told them, we're going to go back to section, which means that I'm going to take another 6 months again. So their plan was to break you mentally.
Yeah, of course. To break you.
Yeah, to break you.
Yeah.
I tell them, hey, I'm used there and stuff. You know, I decided one day, I took the sheet, the bad sheet, the pen. So I was writing everything happening to me in that sheet. I put a bed like this, I write there. At night, I write who I saw there, the snitches I saw there, what right. They told me, what they, I was, yeah, man, that shit, I was 6 months, I mean, you have a 1 year, I sit section 29, wow. At different police stations.
Right.
Right there. Imagine, if now I want to see people, because I don't sleep, I see these people, these policemen, I don't see people. Now I'll tell them that I'm sick.
Right.
So I'm not allowed to see the outside doctor. So they take you to a special doctor. I think this doctor that descended from Russia. He's from Ukraine, something like that. I think this doctor, yeah, okay. From there. So they will take me there. But one comrade, while I was there at detention, he told comrades must never allow them. Inject you, please don't take it, right. Otherwise you will die.
Right.
So mostly I know, if I complain with the truth, 8 days, it's another problem. They must take me there.
Right.
And I come, so that for me, if I go there, I know this district sergeant is in the court on the top. So to go there, you go with the lift. So you see people for the first time. Right. People, some of them know me, but I'm not allowed to meet them.
Of course.
I'm handcuffed from here to there. I come there, maybe take an hour, wait, go there. At least I saw people now. Now is the time you have to go with them, with the special branch, all over Cape Town, looking for our MK soldiers.
Right.
Maybe by love, they know them. But I must be in point, yeah, this
point
one and
mad,
that
yeah.
One. But okay, I said, okay, the best thing, let me agree. For me to go, to see.
Oh, wow, yeah.
To be honest, I know if I drive the streets, I'll see people I know, but they don't see the car is tempered. I see them.
Right.
They don't see me.
Yeah.
So we'll drive. I don't see people. Mm-hmm. They come back there. So they'll advise, look, that man pointed me. Is that an old man? He asked me, he must tell me what happened to him. John, tell me what saves you from death? Remember, I told them I don't know English, I don't know Afrikaans, so he is my interpreter.
Right.
Everything they say to me, I know what they're saying.
Yeah,
I already
have
the answer. So he stand up, show him. He take his pants out. He was shot somewhere in them, right?
Mm.
Now, he asked me, I wanted to laugh over this thing. Every time I see this man, I laugh. Because
right.
He asked me a very silly question. He said, John, what saves you from death? Guess what he said? Cooperation, he said.
Wow.
He's going to predict that thing. So he said to me, tell me, if you want to survive here,
you have to cooperate.
Yeah. Eventually, he said, look, you are very young. You're from Cape Town. We have been in Joburg. So we can take you, right, get your wife a better treatment if you join this Askar group.
Yeah.
I said to them, you know what? If you didn't beat me all this, maybe I have to join you guys, but you can't beat me like this. I remember every day, there was someone smuggling papers there to read at the conference. Giving me strength and hope. So I was very motivated for a while. Said, no, man, you can kill me, because lots of people have died here. Eventually, they take me to court. I was charged for terrorism. 15 counts of terrorism. One count of escape. Come back on that one. Right? No bail.
No bail.
No bail.
No, of course not.
While I was there, something happened. I met one of the comrades. I saw him in Angola, in another cell. This young boy, he was very sympathetic. The policeman was guiding me. So he asked me, why were you interested here? Remember, there was this Council of Churches, remember?
Mm.
That was helping comrades who were arrested. Led by the French Chican, something like that, those days. So I told this boy, look, I'm not a terrorist. I'm a member of South African Churches. I'm a priest.
Okay.
Yes. So he was very sympathetic with me, with my story. But my comrade, another cell, he didn't want to see that comrade. He regarded me as a terrorist.
Right.
He's a young boy from the college. So he was taught the ANC terrorists are very dangerous. People can just disappear in the cell. So he was very strict with that man. Right. But to me, it was very nice. So while, if this boy goes up for lunch, so he will open his cell and my cell like this, and that man has come to talk to me. So we used to discuss. I see you in paradise. You're very close with this man. Can you tell him, give him some letters to smuggle outside? And then this boy agreed.
Okay.
But now we have to write in Portuguese or other language so that he cannot read it. So he was doing that thing. One day this boy told me in his mind to get married. Can organize money. I mean, prison, right? He asked me to. I said, yeah, I can organize. So I sure said yes, provided you can let us go out here. I said yes, sir. But accept that man. If there's no deal, you're not escaping with me. There's no deal.
Right.
So eventually he agreed. We wrote the letter. The money came. Right, smuggling the shoes.
Okay.
He came. And I gave him the money. Imagine that time we were busy gymming inside the cell. We were gymming there.
Yeah.
Ever since I went in that cell, I never washed with the warm water or hot water.
Okay, right.
Cold water.
Yeah, yeah.
But ever since I was arrested inside there.
Right.
So this boy one day came in the morning. He's joyful, happy. He asked me, can you guess what is this? I mean, I'm angry. It is in the plastic, in the scaffolding, something there. There is a pistol, it's a Makarov.
Okay, wow.
And some rounds.
Okay.
Can you guess what is this? Okay, it's a gun. He said, I meant what I said to you. So I said, the deal's still on. My comrade said, oh, yeah, fine. One day he came to me. I must get to go. It was on the 27th of January. 1989, he came to us, see, I heard the news, both of you are not cooperating, so the special branch are going to kill you both, they're going to take you, so you must leave. The date is the 26th. On the 27th, he told me, now I have to go. Now there was another friend of us, he's a cop, so the next cop, and he's a Muslim guy, I think he's a Karadok, something like that. this guy used to bring us food and comic books.
Right.
Women that are allowed to read books, read papers, we don't know anything.
Right.
So this man, Shem, he came open there. My cell at night when he comes, doesn't lock it. Only cell that he's locking, that one, a friend of mine, was too dangerous. Mm-hmm. And that man, remember, when he was there, they diagnosed him with yellow jaundice, something like that. They beat him too much. So they thought he's mentally ill.
Right.
But while it was okay, he played that game if he's mad.
Yes, yes, yes.
So this cop, one day, bring us food. He took a gun and pointed him. We took him to a cell and opened that cell of my friend. So we took his firearm. We didn't kill him. Imagine this, the key that we took is a master key to open the cells in the police station, Wembeck cells, So at the next to the police station is the barracks, the police barracks. Right. It was the 28th, I think it was the 28th of January, I remember. It was very hot. Saturday summer.
Mm.
As we were walking out, we are grieving, my friend. He took one bullet, put it in his pocket, and he take one, he said, paradise. If we go out here, we encounter a skirmish with them, we shoot and fire, and then we leave one bullet. You put it in my head, you put it in my head.
Right.
So we agreed. Right. So we were very many times, look, man, it's right, I'll kill ourselves if we don't go out here.
Yeah.
So luckily, there was no skirmish.
Okay.
The people supposed to fetch us outside when you jump the fence were not there.
Right.
Now we have to go for a transport. On our way to the taxi, it's 9 o'clock. We're doubting if we will get the taxi. We saw this notorious policeman who we used to tell us nonsense when he came to cut us at night. My friend wanted to say, no, don't shoot him. We end up hijacking a taxi with the domestic workers going to his white people's places.
All
right. We hijacked that taxi. Imagine, I think somebody informed them that we escaped there.
Right.
Now they have to go and get the station commander for a master key to open themselves again there so that they can bring this call.
Yeah.
On our way, we saw police vans going the direction where we came from. Right? This is how we escaped there. Now, when we came to books, I split. Tell my friendship, you go your place, you like on my side. I'm telling you, it was a nightmare.
So, this is the split now, where you both split up. What happened there?
Yes, after we split.
And have they made the movie yet? Because this needs to be a movie.
After we split it, right? I mean, we escaped it, right?
Mm.
So, this came to the news. Just two terrorists, ANC terrorists, escaped at Wembeck police cells, right? Well, like that. So, while the police are looking for us, one day, where I was sleeping, I was going to see my mother for the last time. I had that feeling, because during the day, imagine I'm not supposed to go there. I was carrying my AK.
Right.
Yeah. But when I look at the street, I saw people wearing the windows, looking there. I said there's something. So even my own cousin, my family, why people? I greet them, but I don't want to greet. I said there's something wrong here. Right. Anyway. I thought, let me go to a shop to buy a newspaper. I never even paid that newspaper. When I go there, I know those people there. When I looked up, that old man, he knows me. When I come there, he said to me, I didn't want to talk. I said, what? When he came with the paper, I didn't look at inside the shop. When I go outside, I saw my face
on
there,
the front page.
This is the original escapee.
Right.
Who escaped that fire, right?
Right.
Remember, I was arrested.
Yeah.
Now I escaped in prison.
Yeah.
Right? Now they're looking for us. So I thought, I must not come home, I must go somewhere else. I think one of the informers told him this person is somewhere around. I see helicopters and what, and police. So I managed to run.
Okay.
Right? Until, I think it was, I think 2 days or a day before Christian was killed by this AWP, but they believe it's them. Christian was arrested again.
Wow.
Now the problem, I had some little problems while I escaped, because no people wanted to harbor me that time.
Right.
Yeah, for the second time now.
Right.
People are afraid they're going to be arrested, because every time in the paper, in the TV, every time in the news, now I learned later that my friend was arrested in Katy's, I think in Philippia.
The one you escaped with?
Yeah, he was arrested. Right. So now, he's Mickey now, all my names, is the original SKP. Right. And it's dangerous, it's armed. And then there was the serious problem. I have AIDS, HIV AIDS.
What?
See now? Right. Serious problem.
So nobody don't want to be with you?
Even my girlfriend,
yeah.
The child, didn't want even, well. Right. You see, there was a stigma with those things. Of these. See, even when I come there, people didn't understand how to acquire AIDS.
Right.
Right? How you pass it from somebody else. Right. People know this, even if you eat in the same spoon and not what. So I used to visit some of my old friends, my family or friends. We see there when they eat, hey, they would take up maybe an old plate or what. So they do, not be used with them in the house. So I was kept separated. I mean, I have no money, I have no people.
Right.
So I thought the best thing, I wish rather get a statement.
Okay.
Because there, I'm guarded 24 hours a day.
Yes.
Security wise. I eat what I want to eat. You see?
So was it almost like giving yourself up?
It was becoming dangerous for me.
Right.
On the other side, the comrades who were underground inside the camp, coming from exile, were looking for me as well. Why? Because the Boers, what they did before, after we escaped, they never went to the newspapers. They keep it quiet.
Right.
Now, on the other side, the MK soldiers, they know we escaped. So they taught us maybe we were snitchers, we were informers, maybe we are scarers. So it was like that.
Everybody's looking.
Looking for us. So I thought, now, when they came up with, after they arrested my comrade of mine, it's where they started to believe, no man, these people, really ever, they escaped. And someone told me, don't try your luck to go back to exile.
Right.
Because I wanted to go back to Zambia.
Mm.
We said, that route will be dangerous for you.
Right, yeah.
Right. Eventually, I was arrested. While I was on the run, I carried a lot of operations. I was angry. Because I thought, if I'd rather I die or whatever.
Right.
So I recruited a lot of comrades to different units.
Right.
When I was arrested again for the second time, I know now what's going to happen to me. I mean, I was being bold.
Yes, of course.
They're going to torture me. They're going to do this. They're going to do this.
Yeah.
And bad day, I was arrested with a girlfriend of mine, pregnant, 3 months pregnant. Now, they tricked me. Right? If you want your girlfriend to be released, we have to cooperate. So I was scared. I wanted everything to be speedy so that I can be sentenced quickly. So I end up admitting everything.
Okay.
Even things that were not done by me.
Right.
I said, it's me. Right. Now, one day, see, a very serious part, they took me to this special branch place where they put arms, all different kinds of arms. So, my passion was to do what they told me so that I can secure the release of my girlfriend.
Right.
Not knowing that that woman, they beat her until lose and take the miscarriage. I never knew that thing. They take me on that one. Now they put these firearms there. I disassembled all of them. Assembled all of them. No, guess what happened there? After I did it between 2-3 minutes. That name came in that this man is a special operation person came there. Said, yeah. That informer was right when he said you're a member of special ops. I mean, none of the comrades were arrested before you can do this within a short space of time. I didn't mind about that. So I started to go to court. I stayed almost 5 years going to court, charged with that terrorism.
5 years?
Yeah, I go to court maybe twice a year, four times.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go maybe on March, appear no bail.
Right.
I'll go again in June or July, right?
Mm.
Then I'll go maybe September or October, then the court closed.
Right.
Like that happened. But eventually, there was no stand to Robben Island. Because I didn't plead guilty, right? All those counts, 15 counts of terrorism, 1 count of escape, 9 attempted murder cases we have. So lots of things in that one of escape, right, attending. Luckily, if you remember, there were those talks about talks. Remember, when the government talked with the ANC.
Yes. Right.
So there was a deal that all exiles
must come home.
Yeah. The release of political prisoners, all those kind of nonsense. Mm-hmm. Now they came to us. We were told if you want to be released, very crucial one, you have to renounce violence.
Right.
For order for you to be released. I said, I mean, when I read those conditions, I said, I never. Most comrades were released. I said, never.
Okay.
Because when house arrest, all this kind of, but my mother came one time in the prison. They asked me, man, please, man, sign these papers. We still need you. Anyway, I signed the papers. I was not allowed to have visitors, 4 visitors per day. No, not more than 4 people.
That was at home?
At home, yeah. I had to report in the police station from 6 in the morning and then 6 later.
Right.
Of which, on the line, I found this very, very dangerous for me, because this askaris, those from informers, they were killing comrades along the way.
Right, yeah.
So I end up not going there, and then if you don't go, you send back to prison. I said, right. I rather, one day they come and fetch me. I explained to them. I mean, I've been followed by people I don't know. Sometimes I have to run for my life.
Right.
So now I have to get a transport to go there. Eventually, I was released, right, with these orders, back with the community. But the funny thing, but very curious thing, the day I was released, right, the next day, the cops came there, special branch, to arrest me. They suspected that I threw a grenade to one of the counselor's house. Right? So officially never been there. So lucky they take me there and bring me back.
Right.
So that was it.
Okay.
After my release.
Wow. What a story.
Incredible.
Incredible.
Incredible. Gotta round up now.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm stunned.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Like we said, this should be a movie. It should be a film.
Well, we're glad you survived. We thank you for your efforts. We thank the revolutionary generation for the sacrifices that you guys have made, because it couldn't have been easy. I can't even imagine it. Mm. And what you had to go through, it's unimaginable. But I'm sure South Africa thanks you.
Yes.
The wider black community thank you.
Yes.
And we thank you for your time here today. The revolutionary brother.
Yes.
Brother Paradise.
Paradise. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a wonderful conversation. This has been Garvey's Ghost in the Spectrum of Roots. Do remember to like, subscribe and share. Thank you to all the viewers and the listeners. Peace.
Thank you, brother.
Bless.
Thanks.